Minutes. I'm Alex Michelson. Another busy week in politics. This week, we're talking about some of the California issues with Mayor Eric Garcetti, who, for some discussion, would be running for president, decided not to run for president, has been dealing with homelessness, which has been sort of the bane of his existence, the big issue that he's had to deal with every single day. Made some news on our show by describing homelessness as the way that LA is dealing with it as the model for the rest of the country, which not everybody was necessarily a big believer in what he's saying there. Also talked about fires, and we had some fun with him as well. Have a great panel this week. Ethan Bierman and also Joanna Mosca joining us for the first time. Plus, joining us is Michael Knowles from the Daily Wire coming back. So we're going to hear from them in a second, but let's begin with the mayor of Los Angeles, the 42nd mayor, Eric Garcetti. Here he is.
Welcome back to The Issue Is.
Great to be back with you. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you so much. This week, another week, more fires. Wow. It seems almost like whack-a-mole in terms of dealing with these fires. Wow. I know we both want to give a shout-out to our first responders.
No question. I was with them all week in the middle of the night. I saw folks who are the heroes on the line, and I know a lot of people want to be back in their homes. They wanted to be back in their homes, too, but they did an incredible job this week.
So let's talk, though, about one of the big issues that's come out recently is this question about power and some of these power lines that may or may not have sparked some of these fires in the past. Northern California has done a lot of wide-scale power outages. We haven't seen that quite as much here in Southern California. Right. What do we do about these power lines that, in some cases, are starting these fires?
Well, my heart goes out to Northern Californians who have to deal with this. We're very lucky in the city of Los Angeles because the Department of Water and Power. We have about 485 square miles compared with 20 or 40,000 square miles for PG&E and for Southern California Edison. So in the city, we're reasonably well protected. We don't have to do those proactive outages, and we've kept people's power on, even in Brentwood and Pacific Palisades this week during the Getty fire. That said, you know, the state has no direct power. These decisions are completely made by the executives of these independent utilities. So I can tell the DWPP folks what to do, keep power on or not, listen to their suggestions. The governor and the legislature are literally, no pun intended, powerless to do anything. And so, you know, we, I think, have to look at some changes in state law. And we have to remember, too, just throwing the liability onto these private utilities, we're all pissed off at them in places like Northern California. But that comes back in your rates. They may see a doubling of their rates just to deal with the fire liability up there.
Another, of course, big issue, sort of the biggest issue that you deal with these days is homelessness.
Absolutely.
Of course, a few years ago, you asked voters to pass Proposition HHH. Yes. This is $1 billion to build 10,000 affordable housing units. The controller came out with a report that said that zero units have been built and said that the average cost per unit is something like $530,000. How is that okay? How is that acceptable?
So two things. One, we have over 1,200 units that have been built of supportive housing since that passed. But people know when you pass a new thing, to build something takes probably 2 to 2.5 years. These are permanent apartments. These aren't the shelters, which we're popping up now every 60 days or so. We're able to get a new one up, and by the end of the year, we'll have 2,000 beds worth of shelters. But the 10,000 apartments, which will actually, we think we're going to get to about 13,000 bedrooms worth of permanent housing. This is housing that comes also with support. So you can't just look at the price of an apartment. They sometimes have mental health care. They have substance abuse centers in them. They will have child care. So if you divide that whole building by 50 units, you get a price. But the units themselves are cheaper. That said, I want to reassure taxpayers, we're only subsidizing about 150,000 of that 500,000. That's market rate to build anything. It's a strong economy, so labor costs more. Our tariffs have made steel go up.
So where's the rest of the money come from?
That's the more important question. I'm not worried that we will meet our goals and deliver exactly what we told taxpayers we'd do over a decade. We'll probably do it 5 years early. That said, when that money runs out, we're going to need a second infusion because there's no question LA now has the model. In fact, in Washington, D.C., at a recent conference, they said, we're the model for how you deal with homelessness. We've gone from 9,000 to 21,000 people housed a year. But you and I look on the streets, to me, this is something getting worse.
Yeah. Well, not only to us. I mean, the statistics point out the fact that it's getting worse. The homeless count show that we're up. So how is LA the model if the homeless count is going up?
Because I had the same feeling. And I remind people, the city has very little power compared to what the county, state, and federal government has for affordable housing, mental health care, hospitals. None of that's in the city. I've got cops and street cleaners, and you can't clean or arrest your way out of this solely. But the reason it's the model is because we've been able to, like I said, not only go from 9,000, but to 21,000 people a year that we are housing. Problem is we probably need even more resources. The federal government's cut by 80% its affordable housing over the last decade, and the state obliterated redevelopment, which was the money that we used. Just if we had that money that we had 10 years ago, mm-hmm. I could have built 40,000 more units of housing. When you think about the number of people on the street, that is equal to the number of people on the streets today.
But we look at like these fires this week, right? And you're able to put up temporary shelters in a matter of hours and have all these people come there. Why can't something like that happen for homelessness? Why isn't some of these abandoned government buildings turned into these shelters to just get the people off the streets?
That's exactly what we're doing. There's two problems. One is you have to make sure people go there. Under our Constitution, you can't force people to go, but we are very successful in building a much better model. If you just pop up a tent someplace, people maybe go for a day or two. If you say you can only spend the night there and you can't bring your partner, your pet, your property, they don't go. But what we are doing is called a bridge home. They are these facilities we have now in Hollywood. We have one going up in the Valley. We've got, by the end of the year, we'll have 26 of them. They're being built in as little as 60 days. Mm-hmm. And what they have is a permanent place you can go while we're getting a permanent apartment for you. That is working, and that's why it's the model. And if the federal government doesn't look at this as a national problem, especially around mental health care, we're just going to be cleaning up behind.
So you need President Trump's help on this.
Absolutely. And when he brought it up, I know a lot of Democrats wanted me just to punch him back. I said any day that the president and the commander-in-chief is talking about homelessness is a good day. Wrote him a letter, told him five things he could do tomorrow to help us if he really wants to clean up the streets, and I hope that he will.
And has he done any of them?
Not yet.
Okay. All right, let's talk about the issue of presidential politics. Yes. Last time you were here, you were like this close from announcing that you were going to run. So many of us thought that you were going to run for president. You decided not to run for president. Yeah. You've sort of played this role where all the different candidates come here and you end up hosting all of them, kind of as an agnostic in the process, trying to advocate for LA. But when you watch those debates, there's got to be part of you that thinks, I could say this, I could do this, I could compete with these guys. Isn't there just a little part of you that feels that way?
Not really. It was the easiest
decision
of my life. I mean, I have the dream job in a place that I love where my city and my family are. Imagine during the fires this week if I was in Iowa. That would rip me apart as a mayor and as an Angeleno. Vice versa, if I was here during some emergency when I could be at a steak fry talking about, you know, winning the presidency, I couldn't do both, and that was an easy decision to make.
We like to play some games here, and I like that you're always game and you take definitive positions.
Not playing the piano, though, tonight.
We're not doing that today, but we are playing a game called Either Or, because we are in a sort of a grand time in L.A. sports, right?
Yes.
So many exciting things. So this is an Either Or between L.A. sports edition.
Absolutely.
So you got to root for one team. Is it the Rams or the Chargers?
Rams. Thank you, Chargers, for the help with our summer youth programs. But Rams, for sure.
Lakers or Clippers?
As I always say to Doc Rivers, a friend, I root for the Clippers every time they play, unless they're playing the Lakers. Lakers till I die.
There you go. LAFC or Galaxy?
Galaxy did an amazing job, but, you know, LAFC plays in the city of L.A., and this year broke every record. I was there rooting them on all year long. LAFC.
I knew you were going to say that. And you were the Falconer for one of their
games.
Exactly. Dodgers or Angels?
Come on. Even well, have to ask.
They are the LA Angels of Anaheim.
I don't mind anybody calling themselves the Angels. They could be the LA Angels, LA Yankees of New York, and I'd room on, but the Dodgers, Dodgers, and we're coming back.
And finally, USC or UCLA?
My dad raised me. It's USC for football and UCLA for basketball.
Oh, that's a safe spot. And you were at UCLA this week.
He went to both, that's why.
You were at UCLA this week talking to the inventors of the internet.
First email was sent from LA to Silicon Valley and Stanford. People didn't know that. This is the pin, actually, 50 years. A guy named Len Kleinrock, I gave him the key to the city. He literally sent the first email from something that's half the size of this wall.
Wow. You know, even as a Trojan, I just gave some love to UCLA.
There you go.
All right, we're going to play
one more game.
It's called Personal Issues. This is where we put 30 seconds on the clock, get to know you a little bit better. Some fun questions, okay? Here we go. We start off with favorite Halloween candy.
Probably Twix.
Favorite actor or actress?
Let's see, probably George Clooney.
Favorite athlete?
Favorite athlete? These days, I gotta say, well, forever Kareem. And James Worthy is a close second.
Who's your role model?
Role model is probably either my father or a woman named Boge Gebre, who's an Ethiopian activist.
Favorite Republican?
Favorite Republican right now, alive?
Yeah.
Probably Tom Tate, the former mayor of Anaheim.
Oh, yes. You guys work closely together, and I've interviewed the two of you together a few times over the years.
Our thanks to Mayor Garcetti. Now to our panel. Michael Knowles from the Daily Wire is with us. He's a conservative, works for Ben Shapiro, hosts a show at 6:30 a.m. every day on the Daily Wire. Also with us, Johanna Maska, for the first time. She is a former aide to President Obama, started with him in 2007, ended up becoming the director of the White House advance for all these different trips, helped plan them, worked with the press, went all over the world with the president, a really interesting job. She's now a consultant. And Also with us is Ethan Bierman, who you see on Fox News Channel all the time. He's a liberal, a lawyer, has a podcast called Left Coast News. So we all start by discussing what you just heard from L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti regarding homelessness.
Welcome all. Welcome to you two for the first time on the show. Michael, as the returning champion, let's start with you. Is L.A. the model for how to deal with homelessness?
To say that L.A. is the model for dealing with homelessness is to say that Krispy Kreme is the model for dealing with obesity. It is just absurd. Over the past year alone, homelessness is up 13% in L.A. County. It's up 16% in L.A. City. There is nothing that we want to mimic about that around the country. Unfortunately, Mayor Garcetti, with all due respect to him, has utterly failed on this issue. It's been 3 years since they passed that $1.2 billion bond. Nothing has happened on it. It's true that the problem has cropped up around the country, but it's particularly bad in L.A.
I think his point, Ethan, was that we are housing more people more successfully. The problem is that there's just more people that keep needing to be housed. Does he have a point, or is
Absolutely.
That sort of a strange messaging?
And, I mean, look, I'm originally from the Midwest, where you freeze to death if you're unhoused at night. So people come here when they're looking for housing. We have kids who run away from abusive homes that are here in Los Angeles that need our care. I know people who are very involved with helping the homeless children. They come here because they can survive, because we do have services, because we don't just lock them up and throw away the key, because we actually have compassion. So that is a major part of it. Yes, we need to be doing better. Yes, we need to bring that cost per unit of housing down. But absolutely, we are the place that's actually trying to do something about it.
Your thoughts, Joanne?
I think if L.A. was the model, Mayor Garcetti would be running for president. And, you know, it's not actually his fault, though. And so here's what I would say is that I grew up in Galesburg, Illinois, and we did have quite a bit of homelessness because the mental health institution had been closed because of Reaganomics. And so this has now been continuation of our slash of our safety net for the least among us that we are seeing in LA, but actually we're seeing the rates rise even faster in Texas, in Arizona, and in places around the country that are not Los Angeles, because our rate is actually in California going down.
Michael, I mean, that is one of the points that he made. Essentially, the federal government is not doing enough to help. The president talks about helping, but isn't doing that much to actually help. What do you
sure.
say to that?
Well, to Joanna's point, Ronald Reagan hasn't been governor of California since 1975. He's been dead for 15 years. When are we going to stop blaming Ronald Reagan
well, let's
for the problems
let's talk
of
about
California?
President Trump right now, though. I mean, Garcetti says he's asking for help, and the president isn't doing anything.
Sure. So what Mayor Garcetti is saying is that we just need more money and we need to get it from the federal government to house more people. The trouble is that our homeless shelters are not being used as they are. There was a survey that went out. They only have a 78% utilization rate. There was a survey of the shelters. More than half of them are not full at capacity every single night. Why is that? Because, to Joanna's point, there's a big problem with mental health in the homeless population. There's a big problem with drug addiction. That's what needs to be addressed. And any way to address homelessness that does not deal with those problems and does not empower police officers to deal with those problems is going to fail.
Ethan, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, oddly, Michael and I have one area of agreement, and that is that the mental health is a major issue here that we have failed back to Reagan, and not a single Republican or Democratic governor has successfully addressed ever since. And it has to do with laws and how we can't just lock people up. So empowering police isn't the issue. We need a SWAT team of mental health professionals to go out and interact with homeless people and get them the mental health care they need in the short-term immediate care and on an ongoing basis to address the issue along with housing.
You know,
last word.
And this is the thing, is you bring up police. Police officers are not trained to deal with mental health issues, and they shouldn't be. They're supposed to protect us. They have enough job responsibilities as it is. And so I see this as a failure of our system, Republicans and Democrats, and we need to fix it. So let's see the solutions.
Don't you think mental health should be part of the process for police officers? What do you mean they shouldn't be trained
What ends up happening is because we aren't dealing with people who have mental health issues. We don't have all of the different services available. Police end up having to be the ones called to these situations. We see it time and time again when they take violent action, not knowing whether this person is a threat. Yeah. And they are not trained to deal with that. They shouldn't have to be the person who's dealing with mental health issues on our streets. There should be a whole slew of solutions for that person before they get to the point of homelessness and the issues of their mental instability on the streets.
Got it. We're going to have to leave it there.
Our discussion with our panel continues. Let's talk about Congresswoman Katie Hill.
I'm leaving because of a misogynistic culture that gleefully consumed my naked pictures, capitalized on my sexuality, and enabled my abusive ex to continue that abuse, this time with the entire country watching.
Katie Hill resigns her seat in Congress, saying she's a victim of revenge porn. She admits to having an improper relationship with a member of her campaign staff. A right-wing website released naked photos of that relationship and apparently was threatening to release potentially hundreds more. Hill was a rising star, one of our most frequent guests right here on The Issue Is. Let's talk about all this with our panel, Michael Knowles, Johanna Maska, and Ethan Bierman. Johanna, let's begin with you. Should she have resigned?
Only Katie Hill knows what would have come out in this ethics investigation. I had to fill out an SF-86 when I went into the White House, and that's the background information. You have to list anything you've done that's blackmailable. And the reason why is because if you're blackmailable, you're not the best representative of America. And so she knows what would have come out in this investigation. Honestly, the fact that she had brought someone into what she's now saying is an abusive relationship, a third party, that shows a stunning lack of judgment, in my opinion. I think she clearly has some personal issues that she needs to deal with, but so too does Duncan Hunter. And this is the problem, is I think that we need to stand against this kind of behavior, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. And I'd like to see Republicans and Democrats come out against it.
Duncan Hunter is a member of Congress who is a Republican who has been indicted. His wife has admitted to some improper behavior, yet he continues to run for re-election. For people that don't, aren't following
that. And was just re-elected at that in the 2018 campaign. After all this, it had come up with five affairs. Look, here's the problem that we run into. There really is a double standard when it comes to women versus men. Naked pictures of a woman is much more titillating, apparently, to many on the right. In particular, there's a misogyny that is applied here because men, 50% roughly, I went back and read through all the sex scandals of the last 20 years. It's about 50% of men on the right who resign. Some of them have to be run out. Some of them are to hold their office. Women, it's instant. It's over. There's no hanging around. Democrats resign. So there is a double standard both on the political side and on the gender
but
side.
But Ethan, to push back on that a little bit, if there was a naked photo of a male politician with a 22-year-old campaign staffer brushing her hair or a naked picture with a bong, don't you think that the media would cover that too?
No, because we have a sitting president who has upwards of 43 accusations of sexual assault, abuse, rape that has happened, and it just gets brushed aside. And we now have videographic evidence with Jeffrey Epstein of him sexually abusing a woman right there on camera.
But he's dead now. I mean, but what about like Anthony Weiner? That sort of brought him down, didn't it?
It did, and again, another Democrat. So Democrats get held fully to the standard. Republicans, it's maybe.
Okay, but then he's a male Democrat. Michael, let's get you in on this.
You know, I'm not that old, but I am old enough to have lived through the Clinton administration, so I'm not quite sure that the Democrats take sex scandals all that hard in the United States. This question is a question of judgment. Joanna, I think your point is absolutely right. It's not just the sex scandal, though it was a bizarre sex scandal. She's cheating and exploiting a 22-year-old young staffer with her husband. Then she dumps both of them to cheat with a male staffer. That's why
we don't know that. She denies.
Allegedly. There are a lot of allegations. Yeah. According to her initial defense of this, that she was being targeted because of her sexuality. Her husband then came out and said, this isn't about your sexuality. You're leaving us for a man. We'll see what happens as those allegations get sorted out. So then the second defense was revenge porn. The real issue is judgment. What sort of public servant would allow themselves to have all of these photos taken? This is absolutely bizarre behavior, an egregious ethical violation, and an egregious lack of judgment from this congressman. And, of course, she should resign.
But isn't it also revenge porn? And isn't that also wrong?
Also, it was funny. I was looking up the different photos that had come out, naked photos of Congress people, just to have some perspective. And it's interesting that the women tend to have pictures taken of them, and the men tend to take their own picture and send it out, which is super disturbing on like every level. So, you know, I don't know what that says about men and women, but I think the bottom line is, when you are representing America, I think you need to have your own house in order before you go to the House. And I think that's true if you're a Democrat or a Republican, and that's what Americans want.
And Ethan, going forward in this district now, because this was a seat that was Republican for many years, Katie Hill was able to flip it. Where do you see this race going forward?
Yeah, I think the Democrats have a great replacement, and I'm going to mess her name up right now. Stark, I believe, is what her name is.
Christy Smith.
Smith, thank you, Christy Smith.
Yeah. She's got to work on her name ID.
Smith. I think that is a placeholder name. But Christy Smith is an excellent candidate. She immediately went after George Papadopoulos, he doesn't even know where California 25 is. I think that's bizarre that a convicted felon is going to be running, or I don't know if that's a felony, that he was convicted of lying, which is a felony, So he's going to try running for that seat. I think the Democrats keep it.
Well, there's also a former congressman, Steve Knight, who held that seat before running for it as well.
I'm sorry to say, I think that the days of that Republican seat are over. I think that, unfortunately, the whole state is trending blue. And even with this egregious sex scandal, drug scandal, judgment scandal, I think the Democrats probably hold it.
Although maybe if people listen to the Michael Knowles
show. That's what I keep telling people.
Go the other direction, right? All right. More now with our panel with our final topic of impeachment.
On this vote, the yeas are 232. The nays are 196.
This week, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi presided over a formal vote of the House establishing an impeachment inquiry into the president. It's looking increasingly like the president will be impeached in the House, but is there any chance Republicans in the Senate can be convinced to turn on him? Back with our panel, Michael Knowles, Johanna Maska, and Ethan Bierman. Ethan, let's start with you.
Yeah, it's going to be a question of whether or not they recognize that they have principles still, because a president who has sold out his country for personal gain against a political opponent in violation of federal law. There's so many federal laws that have been violated here. It's just a question of, will they operate on principle or do they serve their party first? It really is that easy.
And you think the answer is?
We know because the rumors come out that if there was a secret vote, 30 would actually vote to impeach. But it's not a secret vote. It's in public.
It is not a secret vote.
You know, I don't know what it's going to take for Republicans to find their backbones, because you go in private with most of these Republicans and you talk to them, and they are not thrilled with the behavior of this president, especially when it comes to getting foreign governments involved in an election issue. I don't think, though, that the Senate is going to vote. I don't think they're going to impeach the president. And so then we are in a situation where it may very well energize his base. And I think Democrats need to tread very carefully here.
No, they're not going to do it. This is an impeachment in search of a crime. They've tried to do it since before he took office. First it was Russia, then it was Stormy Daniels, then it was the taxes, now it's Ukraine. I think it's going to be a loser issue for Democrats, especially as more about the whistleblower and his relationship to Joe Biden comes out. And I think, as Representative Democrat Al Green said, Democrats believe that if they don't impeach him, they will lose in 2020, and that's why they're pushing for it.
And you're not concerned at all about the principle of asking a foreign government for help and dirt on your opponent?
I'm very concerned about interference in the 2016 election between foreign governments and the Democrats and the DNC and the federal bureaucracy. And that's what the Durham investigation is about. That's what the IG is looking into. And that is, I think, what Democrats are being so defensive over and why they're pushing impeachment right now.
So you would be good if, like, President Obama made that same call that President Trump made?
President Obama, I believe, told Russia's Medvedev that he would have greater flexibility after the election. So I think there's a bit of a double standard going on.
Okay. Our thanks to our panel, and a happy Halloween to everybody that was celebrated this week. Want to encourage you to check out Johanna Maska's podcast. We did a special podcast with her here on The Issue Is, where you can learn all about her time in the Obama administration. Really fascinating. Great stories, great insight. I learned a lot. I hope you'll check it out. Also encourage you to check out a special that we're doing on TV on the borderline shooting 1 year later. We've interviewed some people who lost family members, members of the community that have come together. We've worked really hard on this. It's a kind of an amazing project, and we think it's an inspiring project, and we'll hope you check that out. That is Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. on Fox 11. Hope you also share reviews and let us know what you think about this. We love having you, and we are grateful for you listening. I'm Alex Michelson. See you next time for The Issue Is.